Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
You are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast. My name is Cora Gernan. I created this space for women to share all of the details surrounding their pregnancy, labour, birth and everything in between without feeling shy about the detail. Sit back and enjoy over 100 hours of birth stories told by you, the listeners. Enjoy. Hello there. How are you all? I hope you've had a lovely week. Before we dive into the details of this week's episode, I need to ask you a favour. If you have a spare moment, can you pop on to your podcast platform, click rate, review or subscribe, whichever it allows you to do. I would love if you could take a moment if you're sitting on the train, if you're having a cup of coffee or whatever you're doing, just to share a review. I love to hear how the podcast has impacted you or if it has been a good resource. So thank you for those of you who have, and thank you to those of you who are going to do it, hopefully this week. So to chat about my guest this week, Kathleen. So she talks me through her two pregnancies and births. Kathleen chats about recovering from her cancer treatment, the scary thoughts of the possibility of not being able to have children due to her cancer and due to her treatment. Thankfully, she went on to conceive her first little baby with no difficulty. She was actually shocked herself that she did conceive so quickly. So she talks me through early pregnancy, and then we move on to about the 30-week mark. She was diagnosed with preeclampsia, so she was admitted into hospital, and her little baby was born within a matter of days because things changed quite quickly. So her baby was born via C-section at 30 weeks, and she talks me through life, I suppose, with a preemie. So her baby stayed in hospital for 7 weeks before she got to take her first child home. So she talks a lot about that, and then move on to her second pregnancy. Although it was another cesarean birth, it was a completely different experience. It was a scheduled C-section. Again, she shares details of life as a mother second time round, but in a different situation. She got to bring her baby home from the hospital a matter of days later, whereas the first time around she went home empty-handed. This is a really good episode for those of you who have experienced what Kathleen has. And also, just to mention, a support, the Irish Neonatal Alliance, which Kathleen said were a great support to her in those early days. So enjoy this week's episode. Thank you once again, Kathleen, and I will talk to you all next week. So Kathleen, you are very welcome to the Ireland's Birth Stories podcast.
Thank you. Excited, a bit nervous to tell you all the stuff.
I've just discovered through Zoom and through looking through your back garden window that we live literally 30 seconds away from each other, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. We could have, you know, pre-COVID done this in person, I guess.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So let's get straight into it. Tell me a little bit about yourself and then we'll talk about your births.
So I'm Australian, obviously. I'm a school teacher, and we moved here in 2016. So my partner's from TIP. And so we moved over and lived in Chip for a while with my in-law. Well, we're not married, but my in-laws, and stayed down there. And then I got a job up here in Newbridge, and my partner got a job in Dublin, so we moved up. That's kind of the backstory, I suppose. Yeah, we came to Ireland, brought the Labrador with us, and now we have two kids and a house. So we moved up to Newbridge and stayed there for a year, and then kind of scraped together some money and got the first home buyer's grant, bought a house, and then I got pregnant. So yeah, and then it all just kind of steamrolled from there, I suppose.
So tell me about discovering you were pregnant. Was it planned?
Yeah, so it was, but I had Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2015. So I had cancer treatment in Australia. I had chemo for 9 months. I don't think I'd properly entertained the fact that I may not have children, but it was certainly something that was a very real possibility that it might not happen for us. We were trying and it was planned, but I think it probably happened a lot quicker than we really expected. So I had Hodgkin's lymphoma in 2015, just as we were planning to leave Australia. So I felt a lump on my neck and everyone was like, it'll be fine, don't worry about it. Had a few tests, all negative. And then 2 weeks before we were meant to move to Tipperary, my mum was like, I really want you to just go and get it, you know, really get it checked. I was like, okay, like we'll go to someone else. And a friend of the family was or is an anaesthetist, and she sent me to her, you know, her friend, and he was like, so you have cancer? And we were like, right. So yeah, kind of put a spanner in the works of moving to Ireland, obviously. We moved back in with my parents for a year, and I was really lucky, like treatment went really well. So in Australia, I had the option of freezing my eggs during chemotherapy. So I went obviously to like a reproductive specialist, and I was 28 at the time. So I sort of, you had to weigh up your options. Like, do you delay the cancer treatment and take the time to undergo IVF, or do you wait and see, you know, see what happens? And so his sort of advice was, look, you're of an age where you still have a lot of time ahead of you to fall pregnant. And so he said, look, I think, you know, you really should pursue the chemotherapy first, and then we can discuss other options if you can't fall pregnant, you know, later down the line. So yeah, then I did fall pregnant quite easily. We hadn't been trying that long, so it was, you know, very exciting and not unexpected, but I guess, you know, it was always in the back of my mind that I might not after everything had happened. So yeah, really exciting. So that was Alex, that was the end of 2018. And it was kind of an easy pregnancy, to be honest, until the very end. Like, it was totally fine. A bit sick maybe in the beginning. The only thing I got was I got carpal tunnel syndrome in my hands. And yeah, as a teacher, I couldn't hold the whiteboard marker properly. So it was quite like difficult at work.
So tell me a bit more about that. What is that, and what does it feel like?
So for me, it was just my hands kind of swelled, I suppose, a bit more than they're supposed to. But it obviously hit a particular nerve, and it was like this tingly feeling, but it was 24/7. Like, it didn't go away. Like, some people I think have tingling when they're pregnant, and it sort of like dissipates during the day or something, but mine was there all the time. It was only for like, I suppose, the last 4 or 5 weeks. So it wasn't the whole pregnancy. Okay. I went to the physio, and like, she would massage it and gave me exercises to do, which certainly helped, but, yeah, I suppose it was more of an inconvenience as opposed to like a serious pain as such, you know, and it was just my hands, not anywhere else, which was great. And then the story starts to go a little bit more downhill. So I think all along, like, the baby had been tracking quite small, and everyone kept saying, you know, have you got your dates right? And I was like, yeah, like, I track everything. Like, of course, I know when I get my period. And then we went up for a scan, I think it was 28 weeks. And they were like, oh, look, you know, Bob's a bit small. Let's do a growth scan. Come back next week. We'll do some proper measurements today, remeasure in a week and see where we are. And like, honestly, I was not worried in the slightest. I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. Nobody seemed too stressed. I had been put into the high risk like category at the Coom because I'd had cancer before. So I saw the same nurses and most of the same consultants each appointment, which was really good. So they knew, you know, they knew me. Went up at 29 weeks. And in the week leading up to that, I'd been really swollen. Like my hands had really swelled. My face was really puffy. And I'd had to go and buy new shoes. It was Easter school holidays. And I know I'd gone up and been like, what am I going to wear to work next week? Like I don't fit into my shoes. And had to go and buy a new pair of shoes, a full size bigger. I suppose so with hindsight, like maybe there were a few little like flags. And I rang the Coom twice and they were like, go and get your blood pressure checked. But if it's fine, you know, swelling's pretty normal. Blood pressure was still fine. I went to the chemist twice. They were like, yeah, you're good to go. So yeah, I really didn't think anything of it. And then we got in there and like my partner was with me at 29 weeks, walked into the clinic, you know, you pee in the cup, they take your blood pressure. And gave it back to the nurse and she's like, look, I need you just to sit down here for a minute. And I was like, yeah, no probs. So Kathleen, I need to tell you that you're probably not going to go home for the next 7 or 8 weeks. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I feel fine. Like, I'm okay, you know. She's like, I'm just going to prep you for what the doctor's about to tell you, which is that there's, you know, there's protein in your urine, your blood pressure's really high and you're going to be on bed rest. And I was totally floored. Like, I just had absolutely no inclination that something was that wrong.
How does your body react? This is probably, well, it's the second time you've been delivered really scary news in your life.
I think I was in shock at first. Like I went in, so this is the nurse that told me, the head nurse. And then I walked into the doctor who I had happened to see this consultant a few times.
Okay.
And, you know, she said the same thing. And I was kind of like, okay, like, you know, so what will I do? Like, am I sick? Like, yeah. Will I go to, like, what will I do? And she's like, well, you know, a lot of people with your kind of blood pressure, we manage it with drugs and we'll kind of keep you here, obviously. But, you know, you'll be medicated. It'll be fine. The baby is fine. It was just that my blood pressure had, you know, shown this kind of increase. And I was, you know, like, I was actually, I suppose I was quite calm. I mean, like I was nervous, but I was okay.
Yeah.
I remember I sort of said, oh, you know, can I just go home and get like my pillow and my pajamas? And like, I was like, I wasn't really thinking it's quite so serious. And they were like, no, like this is no, like you have to stay in the bed. And I was like, oh, okay. Right. Like this is quite serious. So that was the Thursday. So I was 30 weeks. That was a Thursday. And so they took me upstairs and I rang my boss and I was like, look, I'm fine. I feel okay. I'm going to bring my laptop in. I can still mark some essays. I can send in lessons. I was really like, this will be fine, right? Like, it's not a big deal. I think I was more concerned that I'd have to sit in the hospital bed for like 7 weeks. I just was like, yeah. Oh my God, this is just horrific. So that day I was kind of okay. Then the next day, still kind of okay. In the weekend, I started to feel worse. So a friend, for example, had dropped in like some food from Avoca and like I was hungry and I was like, yeah, you know, this is okay. And then later that night, I just started to feel really ill. And I rang the nurse and she came over and she's like, yeah, you don't look great. And I said, I've just got this kind of this pain in my like, not my chest, like in my throat almost. And she's like, oh, okay. So the doctor came over and she's like, well, maybe you have heartburn. And I was like, well, you know, I feel like it's a bit more serious than heartburn. They gave me a glass of milk and said, you know, it's probably heartburn. You'll be fine. And then kind of held out all day, the Saturday and the Sunday. They kept upping the blood pressure meds, which I don't know, I suppose I didn't know any different. Like this was my first pregnancy. So I really had no idea what to expect. And then the Monday morning, the nurse who like managed the high risk clinic came in. And the look on her face, she just looked at me. She's like, Kathleen, have you looked in the mirror? And I said, well, not really. Like, you know, I'm sitting here on an 8-bed delivery ward. Like, no. She's like, Kathleen, you are so swollen. She said, you're unrecognizable. Oh, and I was like, oh, right. Okay. Like, right. You know, that's bad. She's like, look, I'm going to take you down to high dependency and we're going to have a chat. And I was like, okay. Like, right. You know, I was like, look, I'm just going to brush my teeth and, you know, go to the bathroom. She's like, no. I'm going to put you in the wheelchair and I'm going to take you down to high dependency. You can do all of that there, but you have to leave the cubicle door open. And that's when I think it hit me. I was like, what the hell? Like, this is really serious. And I rang my partner. He'd gone to work and I rang him. I was like, yeah, you need to be back now, you know, like it's bad. So that was the Monday. I went down to high dependency. Oh, like, and they were so good. Like, everyone was just so lovely, you know. I also have really, really bad veins. It's really hard to cannulate me after the cancer treatment. So, like, it was just horrible. But, you know, it was fine. And all these different doctors came in, and they were like, and, you know, there was this big discussion about, you know, will I make it a little bit further? Because obviously the baby's still really small at 30 weeks. So I got the two doses of steroids for the baby's lungs, which they give routinely if they think a baby's going to be born early. So my partner stayed at the hospital the Monday night, and everything was kind of like, my blood pressure was going up, and I didn't feel well, but I still properly hadn't considered that I'd have to give birth. Like, I don't think I'd really thought about the fact that this was going to happen, you know?
Were those conversations happening around you?
They were, yeah, they were. Okay. And I suppose with hindsight, like, you know, they'd sent, for example, the lactation consultant to chat to me about hand expression before birth, before they'd even decided that I was going to give birth. The pediatrician had come down, like, from ICU to tell me that, you know, if you have a baby really early, what to expect, you know, which is they may not cry, you might not get to hold them, they'll have to go into a ventilator, etc. But I still hadn't, like, I really hadn't properly thought about it. And then I rang my mom, and I think it all just kind of hit me, and started crying. And that's, I think, when I was like, this is, like, I'm going to have a really small baby, you know? So then the Tuesday woke up, and my blood pressure had gone up all night. And they obviously keep, you know, upping the medication, but it just wasn't controlling it. So I think it was about 10 o'clock in the morning, and one of the nurses came in, and she's like, look, we have to call some people, but I think you need to be prepared that something might happen today.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, right. Like, yeah. Okay. You know, you just roll with it. Like, let's be honest, there's nothing you can do. So then it was kind of all systems go. Like, a few different doctors came in and sort of said, you know, this is going to happen today. We're going to schedule it for today. So it wasn't like a crash section. It was, I suppose, technically scheduled. So I think it was scheduled for like 1 or 1:30. And that was that. Like, you know, we really didn't have time to properly process it or think about it or
feel anything,
or even worry. Yeah. Even worry about it. Like
yeah.
A lot of people say, oh, you know, how did you feel? I'm like, well, I don't know if I felt much. Like, to be honest,
yeah.
You just kind of, you're doing as you're told, you know, which sounds silly, but you are. Like, you're just like, okay, yep, I'm just going to do what has to be done. So I had to get a few different infusions, because your blood pressure is so high, like there's a risk of stroke once they do a cesarean. So I can't remember. They took quite a while. It was a couple of hours, maybe 2 hours or so of whatever it was that you get given. And then it was like, you know, we think we're ready for you. Like, we have to take you to theatre. And it just all, yeah, it just kind of all happened. So that was kind of the lead up to it anyway. And then I don't even really remember being wheeled down to the theatre. Like, I don't know. I don't really remember that. I just remember being there, like, you know, on the bed, and they put the spinal in and the anaesthetists. I was terrified, to be honest. I hadn't even considered that I would have to have a section. I had done no birth prep because, you know, it was 30 weeks. Like, I had all my classes booked for like 32, 33 weeks. No one I suppose was that close to had a section. My mom, you know, has four kids, didn't have a section. Like, I just didn't have any experience, you know, of it. I just remember, like, laying on the bed, and there was these two anaesthetists, and they were so lovely. And he said, like, at any moment, if you are just not okay with this, he's like, you tell me and I can knock you out. And I was like, okay, that's a good option, right? And I was like, quite seriously considering it. Like, in hindsight, it's not something you want, but I think at the time I was like, okay, so that's my plan B. Like, I can do that if needs be. And then it all just kind of happens. There was like, I think there was 22 people in the room.
Wow.
I remember just counting all these people and thinking, this is crazy. Like, there's so many people. But like, and then it all kind of went, you know, quite smoothly, to be honest. Like, the spinal went in really easily. Then obviously, like, Shane, my partner, was allowed in. And then all of a sudden you have a baby. Like, and it really does feel like that. He cried as he came out, which I was told very much to not expect. So that was like, I think I was, you know, you're holding your breath up until that point for them to say to you, like, the baby's okay, the baby's alive. Like, you don't know. And there was this, like, yeah, like a proper, you know, a baby cry, like a proper cry. And that's when I kind of felt myself go, oh, it's like, this is okay, you know? And then it's kind of all blurry, to be honest. So, like, they obviously, you don't, like, I didn't get to hold Alex at that time. Neither of us did. He sort of gets whisked off to neonatal ICU. So that all happened, like, fairly quickly. He was 1.4 kilos, which was bigger than they had projected. But still, to me, I was like, that's tiny. Like, not, you know, it's like a little bird. And then that's kind of it. You get wheeled back to, in my case, high dependency by myself, because Shane went with the baby. So I was just weirdly alone in this room by yourself, you know, waiting for everything to wear off, you know. And then all of a sudden, like, you have a baby, and it's just bizarre, I suppose.
Did you have bits and pieces for him? Did you have stuff?
So I had, in kind of this strange panic when they were talking about the baby being small, I had, like, the week before gone and bought a car seat and a buggy. But in short, we had nothing else. Like, I hadn't bought a cot, I'd bought bits and pieces of clothes, but not anything, you know, the nice, pretty stuff, not the really, like, the logical stuff.
Yeah.
No, nothing. And then obviously it would have all been too big anyway. So, you know, it was probably a good thing. I didn't have maternity knickers. I had to, like, I was doing Dunn's.
For you.
Like, seriously, like, yeah, like, I was doing, like, Dunn's ordering online in, like, the Coombe, you know, and he was running up and collecting these orders that I had put in. I didn't have, like, a nightie. I didn't have, literally nothing, no bag patch, nothing. But I suppose you just kind of, I think if it had been your second child, it would have been much more confronting, but we just didn't know any better. We just didn't know any better, you know, and that's a blessing, I think, in some ways. So he was born on the Tuesday and of the afternoon, and I suppose it was probably an hour or two, but I just remember saying to the nurse, like, I just have to go and see him. Like, I don't care how, but I have to get there. And she's like, yeah, okay, like, we'll do this, you know. And she wheeled over a wheelchair, and, you know, like, you just had a section, like, you're bleeding, like, it's just the most horrible, you know, sort of thing. She's like, but you have to stand up. I was like, okay, like, yeah, we can do this. So I got into the wheelchair, and then to get into neonatal ICU, you have to, like, sort of half scrub up, and you have to wear, like, a plastic apron and all sorts of things. And so I got in there, and, like, I remember Shane was just standing there, like, and he was just looking in this ventilator, and there was just this tiny, tiny little baby in there, you know, like, and he was so tiny. Like, I just, like, it was terrifying, you know. And I think Shane felt this kind of sudden rush of, I'm a parent, but I just was terrified. Like, I just didn't feel equipped to, I didn't know what I had to do, I suppose, you know. And you know, the midwives were so nice and so good, and, like, yeah, you get through it, and it is okay. But, I mean, we didn't hold him for 5 days, so that was really hard. So I stayed with him for a few hours then, and then went back to high dependency. I can't remember, I think I was in high dependency for 2 or 3 nights. And then slowly, basically, your blood pressure starts to come down, you know. So once you've given birth, your blood pressure, in my case, it was very slow. It took a good few weeks, but it does just start to come down. So I suppose I was lucky in a way. I was put on a ward. There's only two of us on the ward that I was on. Okay. It's this, you know, great big room. And the other mum had a baby in ICU as well. So, you know, there were no other babies, which, you know, felt kind of sad, but also was probably a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then
how did you feel? How did you feel physically apart from like it was preeclampsia, was it? Yeah.
Yeah, preeclampsia. Yeah. So like I had a headache. I had a really, really bad headache. I suppose from maybe the second or third day I was brought in, like put into hospital. And then afterwards, like honestly, you're just so tired and you're so overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Like I don't even remember any of the, you know, did I still have the headache? I can't remember, you know, and then you've had a section as well. Like, you know,
exactly.
You're in pain from that, like, you know, and yeah, it was hard. My blood pressure still kind of was sort of all over the shop, which apparently is quite common. So like I was on, I think it was 2 hourly checks. So you're not sleeping either. Not that you probably could sleep, but you're not sleeping either, which for me was really hard. Like it was just, yeah, really tough. And then, so when the babies are in ICU, they don't give formula. They give donated breast milk or your own breast milk, obviously. So it's the one thing you can do. So you want to do it. Of course you want to do it. And I had always planned to breastfeed, you know, and read, you know, little bits and pieces, but nothing, I hadn't done anything substantial, you know, hadn't done like a pre-birth course or anything like that. So then you're basically just, here's the pump, off you go, best of luck, you know. And oh God, it was just so disheartening. Like I pumped and pumped and pumped every, well, like the suggestion was 3 hours. I think I was doing it every 2.5 hours, like, and which I now know is normal. Getting 1 mil of colostrum at a time is actually totally normal, but I didn't know that at the time, you know. And we were really fortunate, obviously, like the Coombe has donated milk, which is just, I mean, it's amazing. So he got breast milk donation for the first 4 weeks of his life.
Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, it's just, I can't, like, to think that other women do that out of the goodness of their heart is just, it's phenomenal, you know. And you're just so grateful that people have done it. Like, it's truly amazing. And then the rest of the time I basically sat on a breast pump for the next, I don't know, a few months, I guess. Okay. Yeah. So my breast milk took a long time to come in because I was on so many blood pressure medications.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and there might be other stuff. Maybe it's, you know, from my my health before that as well. I don't know. Yeah. So I was discharged after a week. I was really lucky. My sister lives in Scotland, so she came down to help for I think three or four days, and then my mum arrived from Australia. So we sort of had these reinforcements come through, which was, you know, you have to have it. Like you just can't
essential.
Do it
yeah,
alone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's totally essential.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in the midst of all that, we moved house. So you know, everything was really organized and smooth in our lives. But Alex was in the Coombe for 7 weeks. So, like, it was a rough 7 weeks. He was very slow to gain weight and kind of missed all the targets of they, you know, must gain X amount per day, you know, whatever the grams is. And he was very, very slow to gain weight. And it took a long time for him to come off the ventilation. He just, his lungs were small and, you know, it was tough. But he got there. So, you know, you kind of, you graduate out, like you go from NICU to ICU to SCABU, like all these different sections of the baby hospital. And yeah, and then eventually he was out, you know, through lots of, well, mainly feeding, you know, you're there just to feed him essentially. And yes, he was in for 7 weeks. He came home on Father's Day, which was very nice.
So how did you navigate? Did you go up there?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell me a bit about that.
Yeah. I suppose you just like, oh God, it's such a blur. Like it really is. So I came home after a week and then my mom had arrived that day, which was really great. So she could, because you can't drive after a section either.
Yeah.
Now look, I probably, probably could have driven a bit earlier, but I didn't feel like I could either. So I went up every day. So I was pumping 3 hourly at that point. And so I would, you know, go up in the morning and feed. At that point, he was still tube fed. He was tube fed for quite a while. And then I would pump while I was up there. So there's pumping rooms in the coombe for when you're there, because you're trying to stick to your own schedule. And then you'd leave milk for him. And we just did that. So then obviously, like, Shane went back to work, and he worked shift work. So it actually worked quite well. So he would call in, say, in the morning on his way home at 6 a.m. and see Alex. And then I would go up probably by like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock with my mum. And we'd sit there most of the day, you know, just kind of also, I suppose, learning how to, not even be a parent, like how to handle a preemie baby as well. You know, I was really nervous, like changing nappies and just little things. I just had no idea what to do. And I was really, really scared of all that. So you sort of have to learn all of that. And then, you know, like, what do the various machines mean? And what does that line mean? And, you know, I'm not medical at all. Like, I'm an English teacher, like, you know, so it was sort of learning all of that as well. So then in the midst of that, I was still getting blood pressure checks. So I had to go down every 3 days and get an hour long blood pressure check where they were checking it every 20 minutes. So look, I mean, in a way, I suppose, it was our first child. We had no one waiting at home, which was really good. My mum was here, so she drove me up and back. You know, it could have been, I can see how it would be much, much harder if that wasn't, you know, the situation. So we were really lucky in that sense, I suppose.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's still a bit of a blur, I suppose.
Then when he came home on Father's Day,
Father's Day, not Mother's Day, but anyway, so they'd said to us the day before that, like, you know, he's looking really, really good, and do you feel comfortable, like, if he was able for it tomorrow, would you be ready? And we were like, well, yeah, I guess so. Like, you've sort of been waiting for this day, and then it just happens really quickly. I can't remember. I think we came home the night before and, like, cleaned the house and got a takeaway. And we're like, oh, like, this is the last time we'll get to do this without a baby. And then, yeah, so we went up in the morning and he was discharged, and it's kind of strange, I suppose, feeling you just kind of handed this baby and like, that's it, you know, good luck, see you later.
Yeah.
So Alex was still being, he was being breastfed, but still being given a top up of my breast milk after every breastfeed. So yeah, that was kind of the next thing we had to tackle. Like, how would we do that? And he was on like a fortifier in the breast milk that they give to premature babies as well. So, you know, we had to order that and organize, like, you know, little bottles and stuff that we just hadn't, I suppose, had to think about. And then he came home and it was just, I don't think we even like spoke to each other for the first 3 days. We just looked at him like, this is amazing, you know? And then I had the best public health nurse, I think, in like the history of Ireland. And she just kept showing up, you know, like, I think she came every day for the first 4 or 5 days. Like, she was just phenomenal. And it was all kind of going okay, but his weight was still tricky and it was still not, he just wasn't plumping up like a newborn should, I suppose. So that was kind of messing with, you know, and I was still pumping, we were giving top-ups. It was just this merry-go-round of well, just feeding. That's all we did, really. But he was okay. Like, he, you know, he was good. He was kind of content enough and happy enough. And at first, I suppose, he was on this three-hourly, like, schedule from the coom, which was kind of nice. You know, he didn't know about cluster feeding because he'd never had an opportunity to do it. He didn't know about any of those sort of normal, if you like, newborn things. And then I think after about the first, I don't know, maybe it was like 8 or 9 days, his weight started to drop off. And I think I knew, and the PHN was like, yeah, we have to think about what to do here. Like, there is, he's just not putting on enough, just under what it really should be. So I gave, like, there was a particular formula and I gave a few formula top-ups, but it still wasn't really like coming up enough. But I was just so adamant that I really wanted to breastfeed. I just, like, I don't know, it was just in my head that it was the one thing I had to do. So we kind of, you know, we kept pushing and kept pushing, and, you know, his weight was kind of getting there. And then finally I sort of realized that I had to go and see a lactation consultant. Like, this was just crazy. Like, I was not coping. He was waking every like hour and a half for a feed. So then turns out he had a really, really severe tongue tie, which we got sorted. So he was 4 months by the time we got it sorted. By the time we got it, you know, noticed, I should say. And like, it wasn't, I suppose it wasn't instant relief, but it certainly like made a huge difference. So I have no idea how nobody noticed, but anyway, nobody noticed prior to that point. So we got the tongue tie released, and then it just kind of slowly started to get better, you know, really slowly, but it did. So I triple fed for 8 months, just pumping after every second feed, and then giving it back to him, you know, in a bottle, which, you know, I wouldn't recommend to anyone, but like, we did it.
Yeah, and that's hard work.
And it was okay. Yeah. And then, yeah, like, and look, and he's fine. Like, he's three now. I suppose we're really lucky. He didn't come home, you know, on oxygen or any other sort of concerns. We've had a few little niggly things, like he's had to have his eyesight checked a few times, and he's had a descended testicle, and, you know, bits and pieces. He has a speech delay, a very serious speech delay, so we have no words yet at three. Now, whether that's related to being prem, you know, I don't think we'll ever know. But yeah, he's really good. Like, he's flying around. He's still small. He's not the most robust child. He's like the, you know, a skinny, like, little 3-year-old. But yeah, like, touch wood, we've been really lucky, I guess, as well, you know.
I just want to take a moment to introduce you to our new podcast sponsors, KiwiCo. So especially with Oliver, I found play actually quite challenging. I wasn't sure if the play that I was doing with him was developmentally what he needed. I was actually quite anxious about it, and I really needed someone to give me guidance and make me move away from researching things, to kind of take that aspect out of it and create something for me to sit down and enjoy with him. So this is pretty much what KiwiCo do, and they have created the Panda Crate. So the Panda Crate is basically a subscription service for play essentials designed just for babies and toddlers aged between 0 to 24 months. So it's created by play experts at KiwiCo in partnership with Seattle Children's Hospital. Panda Crate is thoughtfully designed with care to stimulate your baby's brain development through play. Panda Crate is a science-backed, research-based approach to play and recognises that there's more to babyhood than just the milestones. Panda Crate is designed to support child-led play and open-ended exploration, because every child is different, every path is unique, and each twist and turn and bump in this journey is an opportunity for connection, discovery and learning. Something that I loved about the Panda Crate was the gorgeous wooden toys, and it was really well explained as well. So one of the crates that we got had loads of animals in it, which was really nice because Eva in particular is crazy about animals, so I found that she really connected and interacted with the crate itself, so it was brilliant. How it works: so Panda Crate is a subscription service timed to your child's particular age and stage, with shipments every other month. Each crate includes 2 months worth of play products and activities, along with helpful resources and play inspiration for parents too, which in all honesty is what I have always needed and still do need to this day. Whether you are a first-time parent or not, Panda Crate provides a way to simplify the early years with just right products to support your baby's rapid development in the first 2 years of life. So something that definitely kind of takes the stress and anxiety out of thinking, am I creating the right play environment for my child, especially during those 2 years of lots of sleepless nights. Get 30% off your first month plus free shipping with code IREBIRTH at KiwiCo.com. That's 30% off your first month at KIWICO.com with promo code IREBIRTH. Now, back to this week's episode. Do you think not having the time to like prepare your house and get all your bits together, get all his bits together, not getting to experience those 2 weeks where you were off work, and when, do you think that had an impact on that connection in those first few days? Yeah. Like connecting, like realizing that your son was there, that.
Yeah, maybe. I
Because, you know, very often, like when you're getting ready, you sit there and you look at the baby girls that are going to be filled. You know, you look at all your bits.
Yeah. I think I do sort of, I do feel like I suppose I missed quite a lot. Like, even though, you know, and I know now that not a lot of people do that. You don't do that much at the end of pregnancy, but just the little things that you wanted to do, I suppose I didn't get to do. And I think even just like leaving work so rushed really doesn't sit well with anybody, you know. Mm. it's awkward and uncomfortable, and I think so. I suppose we never really got a chance to sit down as a couple and say, oh, like, you know, this baby's coming. Like, it was just this baby is coming today. I think the first few days as well, I was just like, I didn't know whether to be upset or excited. And some people would come in and say, oh, congratulations, you've had a baby. And you'd be like, oh thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited. And then the next nurse might come in and say, oh, I'm so sorry to hear the baby's in ICU. And you'd be like, oh yeah, that's right. Like, it's sort of
really conflicting. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really conflicting. I remember my brother was living in China at the time, and I remember he was so excited. Like, you know, it's the first like child on my side of the family. And he FaceTimed me. He's like, oh my God, like, I'm an uncle. Like, this is the best thing ever. And I just burst into tears. And I was just like, oh my God, like, what if all this? And I had all these like terrible scenarios. And he was like, oh God, like, you need to not think about that. And he just sort of didn't know what to say. But, you know, it was just this rush. Like, you just, yeah. And then all the other things that you're not prepped for either. Like, I didn't know how long my milk would take to come in. I didn't know about baby blue, like properly know about it. And then you're also thinking logistics. So like that week that I was in hospital, you know, I'm on the phone to my mom, like, could she get here? Was it feasible for her? Like, she was planning to come over once the baby was born. Was it feasible for her to change her flights? And then even like stupid things, I was like, but you have to go and change the sheets on the bed. Like, you know, we have to get the room ready for my mom. Like, you know, and there's no food in the fridge and I hadn't done the grocery shop and like all these really ridiculous, totally inane things. But that's what's going through your head. Like you're, you know, I remember at one point I said to Shane, like, you have to go and do all this stuff. And he's like, it's going to be fine. Like, your mom doesn't care. Like, it's okay. Yeah. So I guess it was just a whirlwind of everything.
So considering, everything you went through, when did you feel was the right time to add to your family? Or was there a big conversation there before you made that decision?
I suppose like for both of us, we never wanted only one child. And that was a discussion we'd had, you know, a long time before. We'd never just wanted one. But I was very nervous thinking about number two.
Yeah.
But I also didn't want too big of a gap. You know, myself and my siblings were quite close in age and same with Shane and his, you know, I didn't want to wait, you know, whatever, 4, 5, 6 years. I really just thought if we're in it, you know, we have to sort of just keep going. So I did loads of reading and I mean like, oh God, I think I read everything on preeclampsia and got stuck into everything. And the general consensus seemed to be that there was a chance that it could be much, much worse than the first time. But, you know, under the guidance of, you know, of someone who knew what they were doing, potentially going on aspirin as well seemed to be the general consensus of the right thing to do. You could hopefully mitigate the risk of it happening as badly again. So we talked about, but I think we also just were like, look, we want to try again, you know. So we did. And yeah, I suppose still, it's, you know, still fell pregnant quite quickly the second time. But I realized much sooner. So sort of like 4 or 5 weeks, I knew I was pregnant. And we decided to go private on the second baby, which like it's not something that I would ever have considered before. And I don't even think like, I really don't think you should have to go private, but it just made me feel safer, I think. Just seeing the same person and the same face, and I just wanted that reassurance. So we fell pregnant. I got a recommendation of a doctor from my GP, someone that she'd been to college with. She's like, look, go up and meet him, you know, see what you think. He might be the right doctor for you. And I met him when I was 7 weeks pregnant and he was just brilliant. He's like, this is the plan. We're going to put you on, they call it baby aspirin, to try and, you know, mitigate the preeclampsia. But look, if it happens again, you know, you're in the right place. You know what to expect now. And we're going to monitor you a lot, lot more. And I was kind of like, okay, but this is okay. And everything was fine. Until 22 weeks. So I'd already done one gestational diabetes test and passed. Then about 21, 22 weeks, I started to wake up in the night and like really had to go to the bathroom and my throat was sore. I was snoring. I was just really uncomfortable. And he's like, look, I'm going to send you for another one. I just want to check that gestational diabetes isn't there. And it was, which was just fantastic. My blood pressure was still fine, but I had gestational diabetes from about, I think it was 22 weeks. And then I was in to see him basically every fortnight until I was 30 weeks. And then every week after that, which like I needed that. I think I was just so worried that I would walk in one day and he'd say today's go day, you know?
Yeah.
No, he didn't. That didn't happen in the end. But I had that.
You were waiting for it, were you?
I was. He was like, look, if we get to 34, 35 weeks, you know, you're going to feel great. And that's much better than 30. I was like, yeah, 35 weeks. That'll be great. That's basically full term in my head, you know. My sister was coming down from Scotland. She was going to book her flights for like 35, 36 weeks with the assumption that the baby would be born. And then it just kind of clicked on, and 30, I was still feeling good at 30 weeks. I was teaching from home, obviously, during COVID. And then he signed me off at 30 weeks, just I was getting really uncomfortable sitting all day. And I was quite nervous as well, I think. Like, it was, you know, I was really, yeah, I was nervous and worried, even though I actually felt fairly okay.
And sorry, what was the plan? Were you going to have another C-section?
Yeah, so it's sort of, I sort of had it in my head that I didn't want to have another section. And the doctor, like, he was really supportive of that. He's like, yeah, like, absolutely, if we get you that far. He's like, but you need to be really prepared that we're not probably going to get that far. And so once we had that conversation at about, like, early on, you know, 15, 16 weeks, I was like, okay, you know what? Maybe I'm okay with a planned section. Like, that's a very different experience. So I went back in the following week and I was like, no, actually, like, let's do a section. I'm okay. Like, this is, you know, it's my choice. It's a much easier and a very different experience. You know, let's book it in. Like, let's do it. So I had it booked for 38 weeks, the day of 38 weeks, which was just because we had assumed that my blood pressure would go up at the end. I felt really comfortable with that. You know, everyone else did as well, like all the doctors and everything did as well. And I was like, yep, 38's great. Like, it's, you know, to me, the baby's like well cooked by that stage, you know, compared to Alex. And then my gestational diabetes was just, it was really hard to control at the end. So I was on insulin twice a day by the end, which was really frustrating. Up until then, everything was kind of okay. Like, the diabetes kind of threw a spanner in the way, but it was still like, you know, it happens to loads of women. I knew that, you know, it was okay. And then it was a Sunday, and July 4th, and I just had this really bad headache, and I knew it was a blood pressure headache. Like, I knew. I had a blood pressure monitor at home, which I'd been using kind of once a week just to keep an eye on it, and it was like sky high, which, you know, it was a home one and I was worried. So I was like, look, maybe it's just a false reading. And I texted my doctor and he rang me like half an hour later. He's like, look, you have to go up to the coon. He's like, let's go, you know, grab your stuff, be prepared that if it's really bad, you know, this baby's fine. Like, you're 37 weeks, this is a-okay. And I was like, okay. And then as he was hanging up, he's like, I am prepared to deliver this baby today if we need to. And that's when I was like, oh my God, like, I'm going up to have a baby now. This is happening. So that was probably midday, I'd say. So, like, we took our time. Like, I knew it wasn't pressing. So, like, I packed my bag, I had a shower, I washed my hair, you know, like, did all the stuff I didn't get to do last time. And then, I suppose the added complication now is, like, we have Alex. So, you know, we had sort of planned for the following week when I had a scheduled section for his grandparents to come up. They live in Tipperary. And I suppose we don't have a lot of other, like, support around. So they happened to be away the weekend, the week before. And so we rang Shane's sister and she was brilliant. Like, she came up from Tip, but I mean, it's still, you know, not that close. And this is the middle of COVID as well. So that's the other added, you know, complication. So Shane drove me up to the coom with Alex in his pajamas, you know, sort of half asleep in the back seat. This was probably like 6 o'clock. And it's actually really funny. He went through a red light, like, near the coom, and there was an undercover police car behind us. So the sirens go on and they're like chasing us down the road. And I was like, oh my God. This is like, you couldn't write this, you know? And they pulled us over and he's like, oh, my wife's having a baby, you know? And they're like, oh, yeah, jump in, like, follow us, don't worry. And so escorted us to the coom. It was hilarious. So he dropped
Alex would have loved that, actually, in the back.
He loved it, yeah, it was the best thing ever. So he dropped me off and then, like, ducked back home to Nace to meet his sister and drop Alex off and put him to bed and, you know, get him sort of sorted. So that was, yeah, 6:30, you say, in the evening. And, like, I went in and they take blood, you know, do all the rest. Like, you can't have a partner in, like, at that point anyway. And then I could see, like, my blood pressure monitor was there and it was still kind of creeping up. You know, the headache was there. Like, I knew things weren't fab. And then my doctor showed up and he's like, let's deliver this baby, you know? And he was just so calm and relaxed. And I was like, yeah, okay, like let's do this, you know? And he's like, look, we can keep you here for a week if that's what you really want. You know, we can put you on medication. We can probably control, like, you know, if that's what you really, really want. He's like, but the baby is fine. The baby's a good size. You know, honestly, everything looks fine. He said, I don't even think that the baby will have to go to ICU or anything like that, which I had very much been prepared for that. Like to get to this point, I was like, this is amazing. So yeah, we kind of made that decision and that was that, you know, we were having a baby. So it was quite late on the Sunday, but that kind of, you know, when everything gets organized and gets sorted. And then Shane came back up, but he wasn't allowed in because of COVID. And then eventually we went down to the theater. And so the only other thing that happened is they couldn't get the spinal in, which was really not a nice experience. It wasn't working. So they had to call in. The head anaesthetist came in and he's like, look, I'm going to give it one go, but if it doesn't work, we're going to put you under. And I was like, no, I really don't want that. Like, I want to experience something happier than last time, you know? Yeah. I don't want to not be there for this, which is, you know, comparatively a very good birth. And I knew it would be. But luckily he got it in first go, so that was that. And then Zoe was born and we had a little girl, and she was perfect. That was it. So, you know, all went really, really smoothly. Like, at that
they
point
they put her up on your chest or anything, because obviously the last time
I didn't even, I think I was in shock. The doctor, like, Mark said to me at one point, he's like, Kathleen, are you okay? Like, you look really, like, surprised. And I was like, I just don't know what I'm meant to feel like that. You know, I didn't get this last time. So I got to, like, I held her, and then Shane took her and sat in recovery while, like, I was, you know, being stitched up and everything. And then, yeah, it was just bizarre. Like, it just felt so, well, no, it's what you're supposed to feel, I'm sure. But, you know, even though I was already a mom, I hadn't felt it. It was lovely. And then you just get carted off and you put in a room with a newborn baby. And I was like, guys, I don't know what to do. Like, I haven't done this. Like, this is not, you know, yeah, I have no idea what's meant to happen. It was really like, not tricky, I suppose. Like, you do know what to do, but yeah, I just sort of, there were still things that I didn't know. I didn't know how long it would take for milk to come in, the baby blues kind of thing. Yeah, I'd had it with Alex, but it was different. Like, it was all mixed up with fear and with, you know, all sorts of other emotions, whereas this was just so different. Like, everything was so happy. Like, it was just so lovely. And then it was all fine. So we stayed in for 3-4 days and then they just let us go home. I was like, wow, like, this is great. Like, this is brilliant.
And together. Yeah.
Together. Yeah. So we sort of got that, like, walking out together thing, which was really nice. It was lovely. So yeah, we had a few little feeding issues in the coom, but I'd had so many issues with Alex. Like, I sort of knew what to do and I knew what to expect, I think, as well. And I think you're a bit braver the second time. Like, you know what to say. You know, you can say, no, actually, I'm going to try this, or whatever it might be. And I was like, I wanted to breastfeed, but I'd had low supply with Alex. I actually ended up taking medication with Alex, like, because I had such a low supply that this time I was like, look, if it doesn't work, I'm happy to combo feed if that's what we need to do. And then everything was fine. It was just great. And I got home and same public health nurse came out again and she was like, you know, this is just amazing. Like, it's just such a lovely follow-up as well to see, like, she helped so much with Alex. And she's like, I don't even really need to come back this time. I was like, I know, this is just bizarre. I got a lactation consultant out almost straight away, nursing mama who lives near us, and she was just amazing. Oh, she's just the best.
She was my PHN, actually.
Oh, was she? Oh, she's just, she's brilliant. So Katie came out and, she's just lovely. I had it a tricky time in hospital with the lactation consultant because I'd had gestational diabetes. So they had assumed that Zoe would, and they wanted to give formula, and I didn't want that to happen. So there was a bit of back and forth. And yeah, Katie was just brilliant. Like, she just was like, but you're home now, you have your baby. She had a tongue tie as well. So we got that done, but like really early, 2 weeks or something. And then we've been flying ever since. And she is just, it's so different. I can't even, it's just a whole different experience. And not that she's been the easiest baby necessarily. I think all babies are hard, to be honest. But it's just, everything has been, I suppose, as it should be. She was 10 months last week. She's flying around, she's almost walking. She's just all go. So it's just a whole different experience, I guess.
Was it a healing birth?
Yeah, I think so. It still wasn't, I suppose, what I necessarily wanted per se, or what I, prior to giving birth, what I thought my birth would be, births would be like.
Yeah.
But I think just being able to come home with your baby when you haven't done that before, and that's something so many people take for granted. And for everything else that could and does go wrong, I think just being able to come home with your baby is just the most amazing thing, And so, it was difficult, but it's meant to be difficult, that's okay. And it was much, much smoother and lovely. Yeah. So it's been really nice. Really, really, really good. So yeah, I think it was healing in a way. We have found it really hard going from one to two.
Stopping.
I was reading your post the other day and I was like, but it's really hard. It's tough. Yeah. I think I had all these grand plans, that I'd get all this help and I would hire someone to do this and to do that. And I'd have a doula and I'd get someone to come in and cook. And I didn't organize any of those things. I was like, yeah, I'll definitely do all that stuff. Did none of it and then wondered why it was hard. It's been really hard and really amazing, all at once. And I suppose that's motherhood. But I suppose that's kind of where we're at,
Thank you so much. That was lovely. Yeah. There's loads of parts of the story, especially your experience with Alex, that people can relate to. Loads of, I think, pockets of your story that you really dove into that would be interesting for other people to hear.
There's probably loads. I think the preeclampsia thing, you just don't expect it to happen. Nobody expects that to happen. It doesn't matter what risk factors you have or anything. You just don't expect it.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you would like to share your story, you're more than welcome to. You can reach out over on the website, irelandsbirthstories.ie, which I have linked in the show notes. Click on the Share Your Story tab and fill out a few details. I'll get back to you as soon as I can with a recording date and a few details on how the podcast itself is recorded. I hope you all have a really, really nice week. I have a couple of interviews this week, so there is the possibility of a bonus episode, depending on how the children sleep this week. It was a brutal week last week. Anyway, chat to you all soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.